And welcome to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, from C70 at the Bat. With me, as always, hopefully not still mad at me because I went to UCB weekend and she didn't, is Tara Wellman, who you can find on Twitter at Tara Wellman, of course, and at Bird Seeds and Bird Tales. Tara was just talking about the torture she had to go through spending time with Brewers fans this last week. And unfortunately, Tara, the Cardinals just didn't give you a whole lot of ammunition to talk back to them. This team sits right now 6 games under .500, 5.5 out of the division. You know, is it time to wave the white flag on this? Is it really time for that? Because I know this division is terrible, but the Cardinals are looking like even more terrible.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. The division is bad enough that if they really wanted to try to make some magic happen, 5.5 games is nothing at this point in the season, especially when, as you mentioned, the Brewers are all right. I don't know that they're as good as everyone thinks they are based on their placement in the division right now. And the Cubs are down too. So I think that it's difficult for me to say at 5.5 games back at this point in the season, let's just call it a year. But at the same time, I think the bigger issue is it's not a single player fix. It's not a one trade, situation where you can get everything that you need in one fell swoop. And it seems like there are more issues than reassigning Chris Maloney and releasing Johnny Peralta are going to solve at this point. So it really just depends from a front office standpoint if you feel like this is a year that you take a chance because the division is so weak, or if you look at how much work it's going to take to change anything for the Cardinals and you just kind of back off of it and see what happens and wait till next year.
Yeah, it's more and more likely that last part's going to happen because it feels like, you're right, this team needs some serious overhaul work, but that's just stuff that just can't get done in season. And while it's going to be again, as Mo has said numerous times, this team is not going to tear down. This team is not going to become a Houston or a Chicago from a few years ago where nothing is going to, you know, you're going to have a whole bunch of people you don't recognize out on the field. They're not going to give up like that. But, you know, are they going to trade off Lance Lynn? I think right now that has to be like a 75% chance between now and the trading deadline. You know, are they going to trade off somebody like or Rosenthal? That's a possibility. I mean, they're going to make some trades like that probably, and then they'll have to, you know, regroup and see what they can do this offseason. You did talk about the coaches, and of course we didn't get a chance to talk last week after all of the reassigning, but, you know, one thing that might stand out, and again, it's tough to say that there is a connection here except for the fact of what has happened since. Mark Badeska comes up as the assistant hitting coach. He's a guy that has had a fairly strong reputation as a hitter guru in the minors, if you will. And since he has come up, the Cardinals have scored at least 6 runs, and I think 6 of the, let's see, 10 games. I mean, that's, for an offense that was puttering along at 2.5, to score no less than 3 in any of those games, and a whole lot more in some of them. Again, I don't know how much connection do we make.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's a pretty small sample size, so we always want to classify those opportunities. But I also think that we've been quite careful to try to make sure that, I don't know, there's, as we have said many times, there's not a really great way to put a number or a stat to the influence of a particular coach. I think there are becoming better and better ways to do that with a manager, but a hitting coach or the pitching coach or the third base coach, it's hard to really know or how to analyze their impact on any given part of the game. But I don't think that it's a surprise that there's a new, a little bit of a fresh voice that the hitters are hearing. And they're starting to do some things differently. Whether it's Matt Carpenter, who, listen, you can tell me all you want that he's hitting because he's in the leadoff spot. I'm never going to buy that. and even if there is some sort of psychological confidence boost he gets from hitting leadoff, it's still one of the most ridiculous things I can I can even discuss. But there certainly could be something to just a new voice, a fresh opinion, or a different approach in, you know, how you work with some of these guys, that is making a difference, especially when it's someone coming up from the minor leagues that has a reputation of kind of being able to fix some guys when they get a little wonky in the big leagues. I mean, this is a coach that Randall Grichuk has worked with in the last couple of seasons, and when he's come back from Memphis, he's hit a lot better. The same thing happened with Colton Wong last year. So it's not like this is a complete unknown that is going to have very little impact. This is a guy that has a pretty significant track record as far as his minor league experience. And it's hard to really quantify how much of an effect he can have this quickly, but it's really not difficult to suggest that something has happened in the last week and a half or so that has some of those big Cardinals bats hitting again.
And to be fair, they've played the Phillies, the Brewers, and the Orioles, none of which are necessarily going to lead the league in ERA. I mean, there is something to who they have played, and this weekend where they played, because apparently anybody with a wiffle ball bat could have hit one out of Camden Yards this weekend. But that said, I mean, yeah, it's kind of interesting to see these connections. I know you don't, you know, as you said, you're dismissing Matt Carpenter's leadoff prowess, but, you know, he's hit 432, not counting today, where he walked three times, and with three home runs, 10 RBI. That's a significantly better rate than he was hitting beforehand. Dexter Fowler has hit well in the second spot. Again, it's, you know, is it coincidence, because Carpenter, of course, said his swing was coming around even before he went up to the leadoff spot. You know, is it just coincidence? Is it some sort of something clicking? I don't know. It's just nice to see some runs on the board. Now, on the flip side of things, as would fit this team, as the hitters put runs on the board, the pitchers decide to do the same thing. And not at bat, which is what we've been seeing. They're allowing numerous runs this week, including a disastrous outing by Adam Wainwright on Saturday, where he allowed eight while he's in there, and an inherited runner scored, 9 runs total charged to him in less than 2 innings. This is like the second or third start that Adam Wainwright has looked like the Adam Wainwright we saw earlier this year. And again, I think it raises what we have talked about. And we kind of gave him a little pass there while he was, you know, doing well. But it just feels like this is the Wainwright we're going to see now. I mean, he may have a stretch or two where he's going to do well. But he's basically, if at best, a 5-inning pitcher, and you hope for a quality start now.
Yeah. As a fan of Adam Wainwright for so many years, it's hard to watch. Mm-hmm. As one of the things that has been so fascinating about watching Wainwright over the years has been the way that he's able to make in-game adjustments, unlike most pitchers are capable of doing. Whether it's the way that he changes his approach the second or third time through a lineup, or what he does when he has runners on base, or what he does in, you know, a key moment in the game that changes things enough, whether it's his delivery or his timing or the sequence of pitches, the way that he's been able to just manipulate the game inning after inning for so long has been one of the most enjoyable things to watch about Adam Wainwright over the course of his career. So to see him in a situation where at this point it feels like if what he's doing isn't working, he can't figure out what else to do it's painful to watch as a fan of his, and that's not even acknowledging what it's doing to the team at this point. But just for the sake of Adam Wainwright, it's been tough. And as tough as it is to watch, I can't even imagine how difficult it is for him to not be able to do what he's done all of his career. So I don't know what he does. I don't know where he goes. I mean, we keep saying there are those few pitchers that can reinvent themselves late in their career and become something just as special in a different way. I don't know that Adam Wainwright's going to be able to do that and still be the ace of the staff, the Carpenter-esque bulldog, the guy that's going to go, you know, deep into games. If he can reinvent himself, I think it's going to have to be in a different capacity, and that's going to be really hard for him to take.
Yeah, and the problem with Adam Wainwright is we were talking about it on Twitter with some people, and I said, look, because I think Dan Buffa pointed out that he's going to get paid $19.5 million next year as well. That's the end of his contract is next season, but at this rate, it's difficult to swallow the $19.5 for this year, much less to think about it for next year. And I said, look, if Adam Wainwright is a guy that if he doesn't think he can compete, he's a very able to walk away from the game and say, I can't do it, I don't want to take the money, blah, blah, blah. The problem is with Adam Wainwright is he always thinks he's one pitch away from fixing it.
Right.
And so I don't know if, you know, I don't know that he's ever going to get to that mindset where he can't do it anymore. But when you take the last 2 years, and I mean, it's just, I mean, that's 47 starts now. That's, you know, more than 10% of his career. And you've got an ERA that's about 5 when you put those 2 years together. It becomes very difficult to think that Adam Wainwright has a lot more that he can do. And again, he obviously can do it here and there. You can have a game or two. He's going to have one. He's got a feel. He's going to get something going. But he's averaging 5 innings a start now, and that's after a couple of good long ones. I don't know. But again, what do you do with him? Because it's not just him right now that's leaking water. Michael Wacha can't seem to get through the 4th inning. You know, Lance Lynn struggled a little bit today. I mean, if it wasn't for Carlos Martinez, I don't know where this team would be. I mean, you can't replace 4/5 of the rotation during the season.
No, and, you know, 3 weeks ago we were talking about how the rotation was so good that it was unfair to the pitching staff that the offense couldn't get going. Now that I'm thinking about that and saying that out loud, as you mentioned that the Cardinals are putting runs on the board both as a lineup and as a pitching staff, maybe that's what was happening. The lineup was just trying to match the zeros that the pitchers were putting on the board. Someone needs to go back to the drawing board a little bit and figure out this whole team chemistry thing if that's the case, because that's nice and all, but it's not how baseball works. But no, I think that it's a difficult situation to try to wade through, similar to when none of the lineup was hitting. But I was thinking about this today, and this just feels like deja vu from last year, and to some extent the year before, when we kept saying, if they can just get everybody going at the same time, then they'll be really good. Well, you can't ask your pitching staff to go 3 weeks without giving up more than a run a game and expect them to not come crashing down to earth at some point when that's the case. So now that you have a lineup that's scoring runs, albeit against lesser opponents and in hitter-friendly ballparks, you know, your pitchers are taking their lumps now. So I don't know that we've really seen what this rotation will be long-term, except that the good starts for Adam Wainwright seem like the anomaly right now, and Michael Wacha was always a concern. I mean, you and I talked about this long before the season started, that I had far less confidence in Michael Wacha's health than it seemed like a lot of people did at the start of the season, not because there was any reason to question what Wacha is capable of when he's healthy, but we just haven't seen that guy in so long that's able to maintain that consistent success that he was a big question mark for me. And at this point, it seems like no one really knows if it's a health issue or if it's just Michael Wacha struggling. But either way, it's a big problem for a rotation that is depending on Carlos Martinez and Mike Leake as the guy that was leading the charge, and now he's getting beat around a little bit too. So it's a tough situation that I don't know how you go about fixing four of your five starters all at the same time.
It is possible the Cardinals need to stop having, you know, team meetings because they keep, you know, maybe split the hitters and the pitchers apart when you're trying to
treat
them.
They're just confused.
Yeah, because they tell them, we'll go out and score runs, and the pitchers are in there, and they just, oh, okay. And, you know, obviously there's some...
It all makes sense now.
Yeah, that's it, obviously. we've got this figured out.
Mo, if you're listening,
right.
Separate these meetings.
That's right. But, yeah, I mean, and if Michael Walker's not hurt, I think that's scarier than if he is. Because, you know, it's one thing to be going six or seven innings and just giving up four or five runs and just not really being there. But he is getting, I mean, one, not going very deep in games, and two, just getting beat around. I mean, really, really a lot of runs scored, a lot of batters on base. And so it makes you worried. I mean, there's a lot of talk about moving him to the bullpen, that he could be a very effective piece there, which it does seem like, you know, first time through, he's usually pretty good. It just goes south very quickly. But like, you know, John Mozeliak said when we were there last week, you know, somebody pointed that out, and he's like, who wants to go and tell Michael Wacha that he's going to the bullpen? Because that's a conversation that can cost him millions of dollars. Now, you could make the argument that his pitching right now is costing him millions of dollars, and it's not going to be that much of a difference, but... go ahead.
I would argue, we've had this conversation before to some extent about Trevor Rosenthal. If you are managing either the roster or in a game based on the egos of your players, then somebody needs to check themselves, because yeah, you're making a lot of money, but you're still getting paid to do your job. And if you're not doing your job, then anyone else who gets paid to do a job is going to have to do something differently. So no one's going to want to go from the rotation to the bullpen, but I don't think he's really enjoying giving up runs and only making it through the fourth inning if he's lucky either. So I would balk at that comment from John Mozeliak a little bit, not because it's not true, but that's why you have people in leadership roles, whether it's the manager or the GM or someone else, to tell these guys what's going to happen. And they might not always like it, but you're not in the business of making everybody happy. You're in the business of winning baseball games. And Michael Wacha only going four innings isn't accomplishing that. And if he can be successful out of the bullpen, like we talked about this with Trevor Rosenthal, Rosie doesn't want to be in the bullpen, but that's where he's been effective. And it's been a huge part of the Cardinals' success. Yes, last year was rough, but nonetheless, that's where he's been the biggest impact on the team. So I get that conversation would be difficult, but if they really believe that that's where Michael Wacha can actually be effective, the ego or the paycheck of the player might have to take a backseat at some point.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think Mo does too. I think it's more you want to be really sure when you make that conversation. Because it is such a significant thing. I mean, like he said, you go to arbitration as a seventh or eighth inning guy, you make a whole lot less than you do a guy that made 30-something starts last year.
But to your point, if you go to arbitration as a guy that can't get through four innings, I'm not sure that's really helping your case.
not as much, although arbitration's a strange thing. I agree. And I think that's – I mean, I don't know that they would rule that out. I just think that they've got to, you know, I think they're still very high on Michael Wacha. Let's put it that way. They don't want to make that, you know, perhaps life-altering thing, especially if it's a, you know, you're going to the bullpen full-time versus a temporary assignment. I don't think they would do that without significantly being sure of that. Now, is that conversation coming now? Yeah, I think it's getting closer. It may be more a disabled list move than a bullpen move, but something feels like it's going to have to give. There are some guys in the minor leagues. Marco Gonzalez didn't really sell himself in his outing against the Brewers, but you know, Luke Weaver right now is battling a little bit of a back problem, so you know, there's a couple of your first choices out. You know, Jack Flaherty's doing well, but he hasn't been in AAA all that long. You know, you've got Austin Gomber and people like that that may be somewhere along the way, but it, you know, right now, again, for all the vaunted depth that this Cardinal team has in pitching, I don't know that there's anybody they can, you know, unless they want to slide Tyler Lyons out of the bullpen and into the rotation, I don't know that there's anybody that's just ready to make that step just yet.
Yeah, and that's been a question, I think, as far as the minor league system has been a few years, not just with the staff, but just of things. Even last year at the blogger day, John Mozeliak was talking about some of the real young guys that they have in the system that they're pretty high on, which is great. It doesn't do a whole lot of good backing up the current major league team, but you know, it kind of feeds into this idea that they really didn't expect to win this year to some degree, and they're making most of their plans for a strong run in the next couple of years that will then allow those young guys to be where they need to be rather than being forced into the spotlight because of a problem at the major league level.
Yeah, you know, it just, I don't know, it's like everything. Well, like we said earlier, they used to be good, and now they're not. And that seems to be in so many ways. They used to be able to pitch, and now they can't. They used to, of course, now they actually can hit, so maybe we'll give them that. But this is just, this is a team that we have not seen in a long, long time. I mean, this is a team that you'd have to go back to, well, like I said, I think 2007 to see one this bad this long into the year. And, you know, as Derek Gould pointed out in his podcast, you know, at the end of 2007, there was a new general manager. I don't know that that's the way that the Cardinals are going to go now because there was different things going on at that time. But, you know, there's going to, you would think that if the team wound up sub 500, 10 or more games out, especially behind a Milwaukee team. I mean, that's one thing to lose, you know, to a Cubs team that's, you know, supposedly the best thing ever. That doesn't seem to be, but that's okay. But to lose, you know, that many to a Milwaukee team, you know, I think you start looking and it's like, look, this was a division we should have won or could have at least competed in, and we didn't. We've got to do something different. And, you know, I don't know what that is. I don't know how they do it. But as I said on Meet Me and Mutual, I feel like if this team is still under 500 at July 4th, you have to just assume, even with you know, even with this division, and even if they're still within four or five games at that point, you know, if you're sub 500 at the 4th of July, you're not a good team. I mean, and I don't know that you invest in that team. Is that where you're at? Is this a team that's not going to, at best, is going to stand pat, and at worst sell?
Yeah, I think that. Well, a couple of things. If there was strength in the pitching staff, whether we're talking about the bullpen or the rotation or some combination of the two, we've seen really spectacular pitching carry a team through a postseason run, whether it's the Cardinals or other teams. I think that if you had that sort of core strength in your pitching staff and you were looking at a spectacular return to form for Adam Wainwright and a healthy Michael Wacha and Lance Lynn back from the year off from Tommy John surgery and Carlos Martinez taking the league by storm, and Mike Leake, even if he was just doing what he did last year for the most part, that it would be hard for me if I was John Mozeliak to look at that strength and just give up on it, because there's so much that can do. And if you had Sungwon Oh from last year and Trevor Rosenthal the way that he's pitching, and you had a healthy Kevin Segrist, and you had a healthy Tyler Lyons, and Matt Bowman doing what he's been doing, that there's some stability there as well. So if you had those pieces in place, I think a lot of the guys, whether it's Matt Carpenter or Dexter Fowler, These are guys that over the course of their career have been successful. So to see them struggle this far into the season is frustrating, but you also kind of feel like at some point, they're going to figure it out to some degree. They might not be career years, but they're not going to be completely terrible for the entirety of the season. Then I think it would be a little, it would be difficult for me to walk away from that. And I think that's sort of where I was at a couple of weeks ago when we were watching the rotation do just that. The bullpen's been a disaster all year, so that kind of kills the narrative a little bit. But if that was the case, I would be very tempted to make maybe some bigger changes than normal in order to try to push this team over the hump in a division that doesn't look like it's going to be particularly strong. And once you get into the playoffs, anything can happen. That said, if this is more what the rotation really is, if the bullpen doesn't seem to have a way to right the ship and there aren't really pieces in the minor league system to do that organizationally, I think it's there's not a whole lot you can do to, you know, try to score 18 runs a game. that's not particularly realistic at this point. So the worse the pitching staff looks in my mind, the easier it is to see this season as one where they just, like you said, at best and at worst, try to move some pieces and set themselves up for a run next year or the year after.
Yeah, and it doesn't, honestly, again, with it, I really wish, obviously, the team was in a different situation. but it doesn't bother me to sell a Lance Lynn, to sell, you know, maybe some 1-0. If they can get back, you know, even something resembling a top prospect. Because the Cardinals need some stuff in their minor league system. I think that's just, and again, I don't know that they're going to go out and get anybody's top, you know, super stud guy that's going to be awesome. But, you know, even if they can get some quality guys to help shore up that minor league system and give a little bit more, especially on the offensive side of things, for us to look forward to in the next year or two, that's something. Again, I don't want a full tear down. I don't think they're going to do a full tear down. But being in the position where they could actually, you know, bring in some young talent, it's an interesting position to be in every once in a while. And hopefully they can do something well with it.
And I think this is something that I've said before, and maybe one of the more constant questions that I have about the way John Mozeliak has done things as a general manager, is that I still think that he... I don't know. Maybe he would say that he has a firm grasp on the value of players and the rest of the league doesn't. but it seems to me that whether it's the formula that they use, the way that they evaluate players, that he seems to value his players far differently than the rest of baseball seems to value his players. And I don't know that he's necessarily wrong in most cases, but I do think that if he's going into a situation that he's unfamiliar with as far as selling at the trade deadline, it's going to be uncomfortable to watch him try to, or in some cases have to give in to what the market tells him these players' value is, as opposed to what he personally firmly believes it to be, even to a fault sometimes. And that's a position he's not really been in. So I'm not really sure how he would handle that situation. And I would be a bit concerned that maybe he would just decide not to move some of these pieces because he's not going to get the return that he thinks he should. And then that sort of perpetuates this problem again for next year. So it's going to be a different month and a half or so than we've seen from John Mozeliak in the past.
Yeah, that's a very, very possible outlook. I would like to think, assuming that they have no desire to sign Lance Lynn to a long-term deal, which I don't know if they do or not, if they haven't done it yet, I would feel like there's going to be a couple of those people that there's no reason to hold on to them because they're going to go anyway.
Right.
So hopefully that will spur him to get something out of them. You know, again, Lance Lynn, the way pitching is on at the trade deadline, he should be valuable. The way that the Nationals apparently need anybody that can pitch in the bullpen, you know, they should take, even with someone O not being what he was, he's still better than most of what they throw out there. So, you know, or maybe you trade Trevor Rosenthal. I don't think the Cardinals would want to, but, you know, maybe that's the piece that brings back the most and you go with that. I don't know, but it is going to be interesting to see what Mo does. Before we wrap this up, I just want to ask, you know, when the Cardinals went out and got Dexter Fowler, we thought he was going to be going to help the defense. He's going to get on base. Nobody told me that he was going to be, like, you know, the team's leading home run guy. Where did this come from?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting in the way that people, talking about valuing players, the way that people placed expectations on Dexter Fowler. I think I have a buddy who's a Cubs fan, and he said when I started kind of verbally hoping that the Cardinals would sign Dex, that Dexter Fowler is a cheaper, younger version of Jason Hayward, which, considering Jason Hayward struggles offensively, was not real high praise. But essentially, he was saying, you know, he has some really valuable skills. He has some really great tools. He's not necessarily the centerpiece of a team, but he's also not going to command the kind of money that Jason Hayward did either. I think if you watched, if you lived in Cubs land like I do, the bursts of power that Dexter Fowler has would not be as much of a surprise. But I think a more significant surprise is that no one else is hitting the way that Dexter Fowler is hitting for power either. So you plug him into a lineup that has real, actual power hitters, and he's not going to lead the team in home runs, similar to the way that Matt Carpenter did last year. He shouldn't lead the team in home runs either, but he did. And I think that, you know, Dex is kind of the guy that when he gets around on one, it's going to go a long ways, but that may not be his top tool, shall we say.
Yeah, right now, of course, the Cardinals have a tie at the top of home run lead with Matt Carpenter and Dexter Fowler.
Sure.
And I, you know, your 1-2 guys are supposed to get on for the big guys to bring them in. They're not necessarily supposed to do it all themselves. Which is fine if they do, but it just, you know, well, it's kind of the Jed Jerger, you know, Fowler has 13 home runs and 35 RBIs. Matt Carpenter has 13 home runs, 38 RBI. Jed Jerger has 9 home runs and 28 RBI to be the third place guy. You know, it's not the consistent that we thought, but, you know, right now, especially the tear that this offense has been on over the last week, I mean, you know, at least you're not getting beat, you know, 10 to nothing every week. I mean, you can beat 10 to 9, and that's something, I guess. It counts the same, but it's a little...
It's something.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what,
yeah,
but it's something.
It counts the same, but at least it's a little bit more interesting to watch. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Tara and I will not be with you next week. I know we just didn't do a show last week, and you're like, what are you lazy bums doing? And that's fair. But no, Ness, this coming weekend, Tara's going to join me and a number of other broadcasters, Alan Medlock from my co-host at Meet Me and Mutual. We're going to have Holly and Laura from STL Car Gals, the Mo Zalock approved STL Car Gals. And
I've been a little critical this year. Must not have.
Yeah, I don't know.
Of what I've had to say.
He didn't want to point it out. I don't know. He probably just didn't want to mention
that's
it with you not
fair.
Being there. You know, he didn't want to, you know,
oh, okay.
Point out
sure.
that you weren't
sure.
there. That's probably what it was.
Waste the moment.
Right, exactly. And then we're also going to have Kevin Reynolds from, you know, he does some UCB radio. We're going to have our mid-season roundtable podcast. You'll find that on the Conversations with C70 label. You can find that over on iTunes and things of that nature. But Tara and I will do that this weekend instead of a gateway, so we'll be back at you, I guess, the first weekend in July, hopefully talking about a better team, probably not, but, you know, whatever it is, we'll be here. So, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.